This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
Actually, your host for the next hour is Matt Rothschild. Dom is on vacation today. He's taking the long weekend, the start of the long weekend, which he so much deserves. And I'm pitch hitting for him. I'm the former editor and publisher at the Progressive Magazine and was the executive director at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, for folks who don't know who I am. And I hope you'll get to know me a little more. You can give me a call at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. In the meantime, I'm joined by State Senator-elect, and I love that title, State Senator-elect Jody Habish-Sinikin. Welcome to the show, State Senator.
Thank you, Matt. Glad to be here.
We were all watching your race really closely, and this was in the district near Milwaukee. What was it like to win such a tight race? You were running against right-winger Dewey Strobel, who'd been in the legislature a while. You had lost a race, not against him, but against Dan Knodel just by a handful of votes a couple years before. This also was a close race. Tell me what election night was like for you.
Matt, I can tell you it was very exciting and gratifying because I had worked so incredibly hard over the 7 months leading up to election night. My entire team did. And it was very much a community effort. I felt so much solidarity with folks in our district and actually across the state. So it was very exhilarating because we were able to overperform for this district. It was never a sure thing, as you and your audience of data wonks amongst you were probably well aware. It was known as the most competitive district in the state because there was still a 6 to 7 point Republican advantage, which we needed to overcome. And we were able to do so. And we, under these fairer maps, it was certainly better than the 12-point advantage that existed. Little did we know that there was this hard headwind of Trump Republican coming at us, but it was good that we had ignorance was bliss. We had enough to take care of just with this district itself. And what we were able to do was very much bring over independence, bring out very high turnout, and of course, through the doors and outreach efforts, be able to convince Republicans across the district as well that I would represent their interests better than Dewey Strobel's extremism.
And how did you do that? I know, I mean, effort at the doors and having a smart campaign helped. Was there an issue that worked especially well for you?
It seemed it was a larger issue than any particular policy matter. It was me talking to folks one-on-one, primarily at the doors, and of course at these meet and greets and other gatherings, where I would very much explain the importance of having a legislator who had the commitment, the experience, and the intention to work across the aisle to start allowing Wisconsin to move forward out of this gerrymander. And I just set that contrast between myself and Dewey Strobel. That is really where my professional experience and success has been. And for him, he has demonstrated the opposite.
You mentioned your work at the doors. It sticks in my mind because I was listening to a radio show the other day where they were poo-pooing the idea of going to doors. They say that's outdated. No one answers the door. Forget about going to the doors. It doesn't work anymore. You had a different experience, right?
Very much so. Spent many hours a day, sometimes more than that, over half a day's at the doors. It really is the best opportunity to ask people what is top of mind for them and then really introduce oneself to them and find a point of common interest, even if it is something like cooperation. It could be education, it could be healthcare, safety of our communities, all of that. There's always something that we can find common ground on. And I don't know of any other way to do that. Commercials and literature can only get you so far. It's that personal interaction. And then knowing that humans, all of us, talk to others. So they'll talk to their neighbors, their relatives, their work colleagues. That's the way to do it, in my view.
Well, I'm glad to hear that that still works in Wisconsin. I think the radio show was a national one. They weren't talking about how it works in Wisconsin. We can still do retail politics in Wisconsin and talk to people, listen to people. I mean, I'm impressed that you mentioned listening to where people are at when you introduce yourself at the door, rather than saying, you know, here are the issues, here I am, vote for me. I mean, I do think listening is crucial.
Yeah, it's something that I very much evolved in my approach. When I first started, it was very much me wanting, I felt eager to introduce myself to them. When I soon learned the better approach is first hearing from them and getting a sense of what their concerns are and where they saw themselves politically or otherwise. And that was just a more comfortable, organic way to start any conversation.
Yeah, and I think, I doubt that Dewey Strobel was doing a lot of doors or listening. He never struck me as a great listener, frankly. So not surprised that you won, delighted that you won. I'm talking to State Senator-elect Jody Habish-Sinikin. Election night must have been, though, bittersweet, because you pulled off this victory. Having lost a couple years prior, it must have been quite satisfying to do that. But then, of course, Kamala Harris lost, and we knew it looked bad for her by about 8 o'clock at night. So how did you wrestle with those two emotions?
I can tell you it was a very up and down evening, to say the least. We had a watch party in Thiensville in Ozaukee County, and I can tell you it was a capacity crowd at the start of the evening. It was great. People were really pumped and optimistic and just awesome energy in the room and food and laughing, the whole deal. And then just around the time, as you're saying, we had the TVs up, and we started seeing the results from the East Coast moving west. And it was literally like an air out of a balloon, very deflating for us in our spirits. I have to tell you, I was personally affected also, mm-hmm. notwithstanding my focus on the Senate race. And slowly but surely, the crowd started dwindling until it was just really the hardcore family, friends, campaign people left in that once very crowded room. So it was very disappointing. I would love to tell you that I saw it coming. I did think that it was going to be a very close election, but Kamala would prevail.
I didn't see it coming either. Excuse me for interrupting. I wrote something for Civic Media, 10 reasons why Kamala Harris was going to win. So it shows what I know.
No, I mean, we are in very good company, very, very good company. Up until that day, I did have some foreshadowing once again at the doors. I did doors, as you imagine, all over this conservative district. It's very, very purple in many, many portions and red even. So I would start with my race and then, of course, start talking up and down the ballot. And I did detect reticence when I would get to the presidential. There wasn't that many people who were sure, who were enthusiastic, that there was a lack of certainty. There were some folks, but not the majority. So I guess, channeling Encyclopedia Brown, I had some clues to that, but I still felt surprised and very disappointed and disheartened that night.
Did you run into people who said they were going to vote for you and also vote for Trump?
Yes, many people, actually.
And why do you think that is?
I think that at the local level, people understood that Dewey had 13 years to have made a difference in Wisconsin and to move us forward for our children and for the education, for our local communities, for our healthcare system, our universities, up and down the issues. And he did not deliver. And I was able to really focus on my past experience on working across the aisle and my commitment to really make progress on those issues and others, that really was compelling. At the national level, people were very much focused on immigration and pocketbook issues, which we know from having digested all the results, there was a great deal of dissatisfaction with the Biden administration. And that was something with these incumbents across the world. And with Kamala having just about 100 days to get her broader message across about the threat that Trump posed, not just to our democracy, but to our economy and our well-being, I just don't think that there was enough time to get that message out. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, I feel bad for Kamala Harris. I mean, sure, we can nitpick this thing, that thing, the other thing, but she threw her heart into that race. She gave a tremendous performance at the debate and just beat the living crap out of Donald Trump during the debate. And I like the fact that she was, you know, trying to bring some joy in talking about freedom. Those are important issues. And so I hope she'll come speak out again. I know today I saw that vice presidential candidate Governor Walz gave his first interview and it was pretty humble about it. You know, they asked him whether he was the right choice for vice president. He said, history's going to have to decide that one. I did the best I could. Sorry, we didn't win, you know, and I think that kind of humility was one of the appeals that he brought to the race. We just got a couple minutes left. What's going to be a top priority or two for you at the state Senate?
Very much the ones that I committed to during the campaign. Voters have made it clear that they really want certainty with regard to women's reproductive freedoms and health care. So that is something that we need to have happen in Wisconsin for women, for families, for doctors and healthcare. Very much also at the local community level, making sure local communities receive their fair share of revenues at the state level for our community's safety, for fire, paramedic, police, that we have the resources that we need, and most certainly education. How Wisconsin has been falling behind at the university level, as well as K-12, and how to put us back on a good trajectory, which is so important. There are many other issues, as you well know, but those are ones that are of great concern. And of course, tax relief. We have a significant budget available to us. And at the doors, I made a commitment to proceed with strategic tax cuts. And I would like to make sure that we have that happen.
Well, best of luck in the state capitol here in Madison. I've been speaking with State Senator-elect Jody Habesh-Sinikin. So happy you got elected. That was some of the good news on November 5th. We'll be right back on the Dom Salvia Show.
Thank you, Matt.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hey, Matt Rothschild with you on the Dom Salvia Show. Dom's off today. I hope he's having a good start to the weekend, and I hope you all are going to enjoy the weekend. The weather's supposed to be great. You're listening to the Dom Salvia Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We were talking earlier on the show about Jeff Bezos of the Washington Post sucking up to Trump some more, if you can believe that. Of course, Bezos pulled the editorial that the editorial staff had written in endorsing Kamala Harris and deciding late in the day not to do any endorsement, which was a pathetic capitulation. And then this week he is bragging about Trump, saying Trump is calmer than he used to be and that he's grown in the past years. And one of the things he likes about Trump is Trump's campaign against regulation. He said, I think it's going to be great. Of course he does. He's running a huge business and doesn't want to be regulated. Let me defend regulation for a second, because you hear all these people on the right attacking regulation, all these billionaires attacking regulation. Of course they're attacking a regulation, because regulation is the only thing that stands between them and you being ripped off, between them and you having to drink dirty water or breathe foul air, or you buying dangerous products, or you not getting paid a minimum wage. That's what regulation is about. And they want to have nothing standing between them and the maximization of profits. There are only two things in this country that can stand in the way of corporations and their maximization of profits, no matter whether it's gouging consumers or ruining the environment. And those two things are labor unions and government regulation. And they've successfully, the billionaire class, attacked unions in a devastating way over the last 30 years, so that it's only about 10% of the workforce now. And we saw that Walker attacked unions here terribly. Fortunately, we just had Jeff Mandel on a little bit earlier from Law Forward. We're going to get a lot of the worst parts of Act 10 knocked out because of a judge's decision this week and that lawsuit that Law Forward brought. But by and large, unions have taken it on the chin. And so the last thing left is government regulation. And the government is the people trying to stand up for their own rights to have a decent environment and decent working conditions and products that don't kill you. That's what regulation's about. So when these people attack regulation, including Jeff Bezos, it just makes my eyebrows jump. Another capitulation of the media this week was there again on MSNBC. You had Mika Brzezinski, after one of their guests attacked Fox News and said that Pete Hegseth was even too drunk for Fox News. Oh, she thought that had just gone way too far. Here's a little clip of Mika backpedaling.
Before we go to break, a little bit earlier in this block, there was a comment made about Fox News in our coverage about Pete Hegseth and the growing number of allegations about his behavior over the years and possible addiction to alcohol or issues with alcohol. The comment was a little too flippant for this moment that we're in. We just want to make that comment as well. We want to make that clear. We have differences in coverage with Fox News, and that's a good debate that we should have often. But right now, I just want to say there's a lot of good people that work at Fox News who care about Pete Hegseth and will want to leave it at that.
Wow. You know, I heard it first on the Todd Albaugh show that you work with Todd on over there, Zomers. And I was just driving around listening to Civic Media, and I just couldn't believe that they were that cowardly.
Yeah, really. And you can hear the quavering in her voice. Like, I can't tell if she wanted to say that or if she was told to and had to, but either way, it was clear, like, I don't want to be here right now.
Yeah, and, we've got friends over at Fox News, and putting an equivalence between Fox News and MSNBC, which MSNBC has worked so hard not to have that false equivalence. And it's just been just another capitulation. And it was bad enough that she and Joe ran down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the ring and say, we've tried to, be critics on the outside. Now we should work together more. I mean, come on. I haven't watched MSNBC since that happened.
I haven't either. And I know a lot of other people who haven't.
And they shouldn't. I mean, that show should be off the air. I mean, they have totally, after for months and months and months calling Trump a fascist and warning us about fascism, they go down there and, suck up to the fascists. It's unreal. And she had mentioned Pete Hegseth, of course, the nominee for leading the Defense Department. He has vowed to quit his drinking if he gets this job, which is, as someone on Facebook said, the very definition of how an alcoholic acts or thinks or talks. He was talking today on Capitol Hill, condemning the media, saying he didn't want to pay any attention to you guys who are in the media. We've got that clip, don't we?
And I'm proud of what I fought for. I'm not going to back down from them one bit. I will answer all of these senators' questions, but this will not be a process tried in the media. I don't answer to anyone in this group, none of you, not to that camera at all. I answer to President Trump, who received 76 million votes on behalf and a mandate for change. I answer to the 100 senators who are part of this process and those in the committee, and I answer to my Lord and Savior and my wife and my family. I'm proud to be here. And as long as Donald Trump wants me in this fight, I'm going to be standing right here in this fight, fighting to bring our Pentagon back to what it needs to be.
Notice that he didn't say that he answers to the U.S. Constitution. He didn't say about the U.S. Constitution that there's something called the First Amendment, the number one amendment that talks about freedom of speech and freedom of the press. That is the nominee for this post. at least at the moment. I haven't checked CNN in the last minute. I don't know if he's still there. I assume he's not going to be there by Monday morning or by Monday afternoon when Dom Salvia is back here behind the microphone, but who knows?
I sure hope so.
We had Donald Trump issuing a text earlier today. I'm going to read it if I can find it, where he went to bat for his buddy. Here's Trump on social media. Pete Hegseth's doing very well. His support is strong and deep, much more so than the fake news would have you believe. He was a great student. Here's Trump, the elitist. Princeton, Harvard educated, with a military state of mind. He will be a fantastic high-energy Secretary of Defense, which was a typo, one who leads with charisma and skill. Pete is a, and here comes the all caps, winner, and there's nothing that can be done to change that with three exclamation points. So that's Trump today not backing down on Pete Hegseth, as unqualified as this guy is. He also, one of the worst things that Pete Hegseth has done is to apologize for and defend a soldier who committed, in my mind, war crimes, bragged about stabbing someone in the throat to death. Pete Hegseth rallied to this guy's defense, which is disgusting.
Plus his, you know, Dave's Vault tattoos and all that.
Well, there's that. I mean, he talked about, crusades. He wants to be on a crusade. He's a very far right winger. We're going to have a little lighter, more fun conversation after this short break about birds in Wisconsin. We'll be right back in the Dom Salvia Show. Break on to the other side.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Hey, Matt Rothschild with you on the Dom Salvia Show. Dom's off today. He'll be back on Monday. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You know, enough hard politics for now. I'm switching gears to something that I truly love. I often wanted to do a show interviewing people both about their professional career and then ask them about, you know, what is something outside your professional career that really excites you? And for me, it's always been birds. I've been a bird watcher since I was 3 years old. I wrote a little bird watching book when I was about six, and I tried to draw the pictures of the birds that we'd seen around our house in the rural suburbs of Chicago. So I drew a picture on the cover of a ringneck pheasant. I'm a terrible artist, but I tried. My father and I would, and then my brothers later would go bird watching because we had a big backyard and we had this flock of pheasants in the backyard one winter. And anyone who's seen a ringneck pheasant, especially the male, I mean, it's just an astonishingly beautiful bird. And so that was the bird that hooked me. We all have birds that hook us. And that was the one that hooked me, been hooked ever since. And I have a guest here who can carry on with me about birds for a while. His name is Matt Rietz. He's the executive director of the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance, which used to be called the Madison Audubon Society. Matt Rietz, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Matt. Really, really great to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you here. And congratulations on 10 years at the helm over there at Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. Like birds, time flies, right? So I can't believe it's been 10 years. You know, I feel pretty lucky to get to do it, this job. It's hard to believe that I get paid to do what I do, but to work on birds and their conservation is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, it's a real passion of ours. And I've been impressed with the work you've done over there. One of the things you've done is presided over a lot of growth in land acquisitions and new wildlife sanctuaries for Southern Wisconsin. Talk about that a little bit. Why is that so important?
Oh boy. I think we're kind of a unique bird conservation organization in that in 1968, our board of directors, which was all volunteer at that time, kind of a more of a smaller organization. They made a pretty big decision to buy a prairie pothole, little 60-acre piece of land just west of, east of town. And it was a known hotspot for birds. People used to like to go there. And they had basically no money. They had, I think, $1,200 in the treasury, and they decided to buy it. And that little prairie pothole became what is now Goose Pond Sanctuary, which is now, I think it's, I should know the exact number, but it's hundreds of acres. We're talking close to 1,000 acres. And we have wildlife sanctuaries too in Lake Mills and then just south of Lake Koshkonong. And we knew this was a great way to protect birds.
I mean, you mentioned Goose Pond, which has a real soft spot in my heart for it, because when I came to Madison in 1983, I'd never seen a sandhill crane. Mm. I'd never seen a tundra swan, which I used to call a whistling swan. And so I went up to Goose Pond. It's in Southern Columbia County. Mm-hmm. And just to see flocks of tundra swans there and sandhill cranes was such a great experience. At one point, they had a blind there, and I got in the blind and took a couple pictures, and that was fun. And I love the area so much that our first house that my wife Jean and I bought was on Hall Road in Southern Columbia County, right around the block from Schoenberg Marsh, which you can't circumnavigate anymore because floods took out some of those roads there. But I used to come to Madison going around the marsh, bird watch in the morning. When I'd come back in the evening, I'd go around the marsh again. And sometimes I'd scoot back over to Goose Pond. I also want to salute Mark and Sue Martin, who have been custodians of Goose Pond for 40 years.
Yeah, more.
And how impressive they are. They used to work the DNR, and they've been taking care of that tremendous facility. But you also just got some really cool property in Rock County, right?
That's right. So we've been really fortunate to work with a number of different people who've been incredibly generous with their time and their talents, like Mark and Sue and David and Roger out in Fayetteville Grove, and Penny and Gary Shackelford, who basically created this incredible habitat area, 375 acres or so, that became a state natural area, is designated a state natural area. So it is incredible. It is a beautiful bunch of different kinds of habitats, really well managed. And they decided at one point that they wanted to protect it forever, and they came to us. And we now own and manage that property. So it's protected in perpetuity.
Tremendously generous gift. I was there once, huge bald eagle's nest on the property.
Yeah, right up front.
Really awesome.
Cool. Yeah, super cool.
And I mean, a lot of our listeners must have seen a bald eagle's nest, but they just get to be gigantic.
Oh, yeah. Tons. They weigh tons. And then oftentimes they're built over many, many years, and they keep piling up sticks. So you can see them from far away. You'll be in rural Wisconsin someplace and look off in the distance, and then a big tree, there'll be a huge clump, but with a bunch of sticks. It's a bald eagle nest.
And the eagle recovery has been tremendous in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I mean, they were in real trouble in the 70s because of DDT, mm-hmm. and the population is way up now.
Way up. It's doing really well. They're off the endangered species list. In fact, Wisconsin, back when DDT was a real big problem, the populations here were plummeting, but we were better off than a lot of other places. And actually, we translocated populations from Wisconsin to the East Coast to help recover populations out of the East.
Oh, I didn't know that. So we were a feeder system.
We were, yeah. So, you know, well, you're welcome, New York.
There you go. I don't know if they sent you a thank you card.
Nope.
Or a Christmas card. Speaking of Christmas, you've got Christmas bird counts. These are annual things. Tell us why those are important.
So there's a number of really interesting citizen science opportunities that you can do to understand birds better. One of them is the breeding bird survey that is a citizen science kind of thing. Every year you go out and count birds during the breeding season along specific routes. So anybody can get involved in this. And the Christmas bird count is basically for wintering birds, to understand patterns of wintering birds here, numbers, et cetera. So it's a nationwide effort. It's coordinated in municipalities. We coordinate it here for Madison. There's CBCs. It's kind of that's what everybody calls it, happening all over the place. We've got them happening at our sanctuaries. There's one up in the Poinette area that Mark and Sue coordinate. They're happening all over the place. So if you're interested in going out and trying to count birds or learn how to count birds, there's volunteer opportunities to do that. And we learn a lot of information from that.
So if someone's listening right now and they want to participate in a Christmas bird count, how do they get in touch with you?
You can go to our website and go to our events page. There's opportunities to sign up there, learn more first and then sign up. There's a wait list on the Madison one because there's so many birders in the area, but there's certainly other opportunities there. So.
And what is the website?
It is swibirds.org.
That's the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. You can also just Google Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance, or you can probably just Google the old name, Madison Audubon Society.
You sure can.
And you'll get it there. I've never done a Christmas bird count. I've never been in the field, actually, during a Christmas bird count. Once I reported from my bird feeders, which is allowed to, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
I had something odd at my feeder. I think it was a Carolina wren, which used to be a bird that had come this far north, and occasionally we get them in the wintertime. And I had it for a couple of winters. I was feeding it live. I'd get live mealworms. I'd put them out, and they'd love that. And mm-hmm. then I put peanut suet. They like that, too. But that's the only it's on my list. It's going to happen. I'm going to get in the field and do one of these Christmas bird counts or do one of the little neighborhoods.
Yeah. I should mention, too, there's also these what are called indoor sits that you can do at the time. So you can watch your feeder. That information is useful as well. And then there's some events like Olbrich. I think has a what's called an indoor sit. You can look at the birds that are around there from inside.
Got nothing that rare right now. It's just the woodpeckers, the regular woodpeckers and nuthatches and chickadees. But I do want to make a recommendation to anyone listening, especially in the winter. It's very important to feed the birds. Mm-hmm. They need the bird feeders. And if you have a suet cage and you hang it up and you get woodpeckers, that's neat. But here's another suggestion with the suet. And I did that this morning. Chop up some of it, dice some of it up, throw it on the ground. A lot of birds don't like being on the suet cage or get chased off by the bigger woodpeckers. And a lot of the other birds, I've seen cardinals and nuthatches and blue jays love it. They're pigs eating the suet on the ground.
Yeah, it's a super rich source of food, and a lot of birds do eat it. You'll feed some squirrels too, but you know those are fantastic also, and chipmunks as well. But and I also, by the way, I made my own suet feeder once. It's the best suet feeder I've ever. I stole the design from somebody else. But you take a log, and then you just get a spade bit or a hole bit or hole saw bit, and you can cut holes in it and chop them out, and then stick suet in them. And the woodpeckers love it because it's natural. It's a natural substance to sit on. And it's fun to watch them. But feeding birds in the winter is really important. There are a lot of natural food sources in the winter. There's a lot fewer, but there's seeds and berries and all sorts of things that birds need. And it's a great supplemental food source. And there's lots of good recommendations for how to go about feeding birds in the winter.
Especially on those coldest mornings. I mean, the last few mornings have been cold. I mean, this weekend's supposed to get warmer. May not be so crucial. But when it gets down to zero or below, they need it. And first thing in the morning, they need it because they've had a cold night. Tell me, a lot of bird watchers, even casual bird watchers in the wintertime here in Wisconsin, me among them, want to go see a snowy owl. Love to see a snowy owl if you can. What's the situation with snowy owls this winter?
Well, oh my gosh. I think everybody knows pretty much what a snowy owl looks like. It's just a spectacularly striking bird. Often all white, beautiful yellow eyes. And so they're an Arctic bird. They nest up in the Arctic in Northern Canada and all the way around world, in Siberia and Northern Europe too. But we're very fortunate during certain years, they'll come migrate down into Wisconsin. And depending on the year, you get maybe sometimes we get maybe 15, 20 of them. And then we'll have big eruption years where breeding has done really well. And there's a lot of owls out there because there's so much food. And we'll get a whole bunch of them. So we got like something like 200 of them here in Wisconsin in 2017, 2018. Last year was about 20 or so. Mm. This year, there's already been about 10. Mm. And they're kind of scattered around the state. They started up in Ashland, but there's one in downtown Milwaukee right
really?
Now. Yeah.
The first time I saw one, I'd never seen one until I moved to Wisconsin. And again, it was right around the Goose Pond area. Mark and Sue Martin notified folks that there were snowy owls around, and so we would just drive along the area there around Highway K and around where the UW Extension has a building on that little prairie road.
Yeah,
and that's where we saw them. It was just so fascinating to see a snowy owl out there. I sometimes see them in the Milwaukee area. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Milwaukee down near where the ferry is. I've seen them there before. Green Bay sometimes has them. Freedom has him sometimes. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I've never seen him there, but I've seen him in Milwaukee. So it's just a thrill for those of you who want to see a snowy. I do want to make one recommendation, or an urgent one, actually, and that is don't disturb the owl.
Yes.
Don't get too close to the owl. Yes. Don't get out of your car. Use your car as a blind. Don't get too close to the animal. You know, a lot of times they're here because their food supply up in Canada has become depleted. They're hungry here. They want to go find a mole or a mouse. Mm-hmm. And if you're getting too close to them, or you're chasing them, or you're a photographer out there trying to get the best shot ever, and you're pursuing them and making them fly, you're hurting their ability to survive.
That is absolutely right. We've got to take good care of them, these unbelievable visitors. If they're looking at you, you're typically too close. Mm-hmm. If they're paying a lot of attention to you. We also tell people, please don't ever feed them. People sometimes are tempted to try to draw them in with mice or something like that.
I know photographers like to do that. There were great gray owls here in Middleton one year when there was an explosion of owls coming down, and I'd actually foolishly driven up to Minnesota way past St. Paul to go see them, and my dad laughed at me. He said, you should have just stayed put because they're coming to see you. But anyway, there were photographers throwing mice out to get the perfect
picture. It's unfortunate.
It's just not cool, no. We've got a caller, Aaron. Do we got time before the bump?
There's only 1 minute. Probably be better.
All right. So, Tom, just hang on. We'll come to you right after this very short break that we're having. I'm talking with Matt Reitz, Executive Director of the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. You're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, longtime birder, longtime progressive. But it's the birds these days.
Yay, birds.
That really bring me solace, especially in this political time. And we'll be right back on the Dom Salvia Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Love that, Paul McCartney. Matt Rothschild with you here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Dom Salvia Show. Dom's off today. He'll be back on Monday. You can join the conversation. We're talking about birds here on our way out the door at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. And I'm joined by Matt Reitz, who is the Executive Director of the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. We had a text from Sherry in Horicon over the break. She loves the birds on her marsh, and she's a wildlife artist. She's talking about the Horicon National Wildlife Refuge, is one of the great places to see birds in Wisconsin. They've had snowy owls there too, I understand. And then we had a text from Sage. How do you have such an accurate count on the snowy owls? I'll throw that one to you, Matt.
Well, fortunately, there's a lot of people in the state who really care about birds, and some of them are professionals. So first of all, sightings of birds are often recorded in something called eBird. And you can go online, you can explore eBird. It might require an account, but it's a really lovely place to find out where people are seeing birds. And some people are really dedicated eBirders. They put their lists in there every day. So you can see where snowy owls have been sighted in the state so far. And then they often get reported to biologists, and biologists are really paying attention to this, particularly bird-related biologists like who work for the DNR, for example. Like Ryan Brady is a name that always comes up because he's always got his finger on the pulse of what's happening in the bird world. So
I had Ryan on one of these shows just a couple of weeks ago. It was always great to talk to Ryan. Probably the best birder in Wisconsin.
One of them, yeah, right. He would tell you he's humble. So
he's certainly in the ranking, though.
Yeah.
Hey, we've got a call from Tom about bird watching. So why don't we hear what Tom's got? Hey, Tom.
Hi, guys. Hi. I look at it as a hobby, in that my angle on it is I kind of verbally communicate with them, and mainly if I hear them you're making their sounds, I'll mimic them. And then they realize that I'm interested, and then they'll call back and they'll get closer. And when they get closer, some will actually fly towards me, then veer away at the last second to take a look. It's like, who's that crazy guy calling up to me? And I'm in a kind of a rural area near a pond and a fields and woods. So I have really a mix of wild birds. And it's a wonderful thing. And I would encourage anybody to take it up as a hobby. It really doesn't need to cost you anything. I mean, I do feed the birds, but I find I believe they have like a sixth sense too, because when I go to other places, restaurants, stores, gas stations, whatever, that I think they know I'm listening, because they'll start getting more excited. Even, you know, the chickadees or sparrows, and they're really very friendly, I find, and it's a wonderful hobby.
Tom, I appreciate the call, Tom. Really appreciate it. And you're right, it doesn't need to be an expensive hobby. I tell people who have a starting interest, a beginning interest in bird watching, don't go buy the most expensive binoculars there is. Mm-mm. I mean, you can buy a cheap pair for $100, probably, right, Matt?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a little less, mm-hmm. and it'll do fine. It'll do fine for your first couple years, and maybe more than that. You don't need to, throw a ton of money away on them.
No, don't be intimidated by birding. Birding is something that you can do at your own level. There are ways to learn how to be a really great birder, but you don't need to compare yourself to the folks who can identify everything. Just go out and enjoy. Just watch a bird for a while. You take a look at a cardinal and see what it's doing. It's incredible behavior.
And a cardinal in the snow is one of the most beautiful things there is. You know, when I was younger, I'm a very competitive person. I don't know if you know that, Matt, but I am. And so I was one of those guys. I want to get to bird. I'm on bird number 310. I want to see bird species number 311. And, there's the big year movie that was done on it. Mm-hmm. But I kind of gave up on that a while ago, and it has heightened my enjoyment and appreciation of the beauty of the birds, which is why I got in the first place, too.
Yeah, and I'm not a lister either. I really just like to watch a bird and their interactions with other birds. It's my favorite part of bird watching is what they're doing. And, to the caller's point, I mean, birds are incredibly interesting on so many fronts. They're incredibly intelligent. Like you were talking about song and recognition. Like, they can recognize, some birds can recognize individual people's faces. Like crows, it's incredible.
And like Tom was saying, I've always wanted to get a bird to eat out of my hand, the old bird in the hand. And I've tried it with chickadee. I know people put up peanuts in their hand and get a chickadee or a nuthatch or a downy woodpecker to come to their hand. I've never succeeded at that. I tried it last winter. I'm going to try it again this winter. But in the spring, I did succeed in getting a pine warbler, of all things.
What?
To eat live mealworms out of my hand. This was the craziest thing. It would come and sit on the doorknob of my front door and do its little trill, telling me he wants more live mealworms. He trained me. I didn't train him, but finally I was able to go out with a live mealworm in my hand, and he would come. I have pictures of it. It's really a highlight.
I think everybody can hear how much joy this brings Matt. And I'll emphasize to everybody else, there are research studies that show the both physical and mental benefits of bird watching. It brings people joy. And I mean, there are, even beyond that, there's so many interesting things about what birds bring. They bring economic value. They bring resource value. They're doing ecosystem services. They're doing pollination and seed dispersal and controlling insects, and they're doing all this stuff for free. So they just have value on so many different levels.
They have value, and it's good for you. You see those studies where people saying, having a fish tank and looking at the fish tank is good for your health and lowers your blood pressure. Well, watching birds just outside my window, that lowers my blood pressure and makes me healthier. Matt Reitz is the executive director of the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. Thanks so much for being my guest today on the Dom Salvia Show. I want to thank our other guests, Jeff Mandel and State Senator-elect Jody Habich-Sinikin. How cool is that? I want to thank the callers and the texters. I especially want to thank Aaron Zommer's on the board doing extra duty today. Tremendous working with you, Aaron. I want to thank Dom for letting me get behind the mic. The Nightlight with Pete Schwab is next. Always a fun show. Have a nice weekend. Enjoy the warm weather.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life you were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for for this moment to arise.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.